Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical. Come get some.
Beware, I live. IGN Gamescoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Vince Ingenito.
Beyond.
Brian Albert.
Hey, everyone.
And Marty Sliva.
Hello there.
And we want to give you an update on a few Xbox Live Arcade games, high-profile games like Trials Fusion, Max, The Curse of Brotherhood, Super Time Force, and Strider HD.
Yeah.
All games that have been announced for a while. Some were announced years ago.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're still not playing them yet.
No.
But you gentlemen have played three of these games recently.
Yes, yes.
Right? So let's start with the one that we actually don't have much of an update on, Trials Fusion. Yeah. We did contact, this was announced at E3.
That's right.
Last year. Mm-hmm. We know what Trials is, the motorcycle stunt game.
Yeah.
So we actually contacted Ubisoft. They didn't have any comment other than to say they will have more news in early 2014.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they have another Digital Days kind of event. A lot of times they have these events that focus purely on downloadable titles.
Yeah.
They had one recently and it focused on bigger games like Child of Light and Valiant Hearts, which are two of the really cool upcoming
games.
Looking
great,
yeah. But yeah, there was no sign of Trials there.
Yeah, and Trials is one of the biggest SBLA games, right?
Yeah, sure.
And so, unless I'm wrong, you could correct me. It came out. It was the Summer of Arcade, right?
You're wrong.
It was one.
No, it was one of those games. Yeah.
So. Who knows? Maybe we could see it as a Summer of Arcade.
I mean, the big question now is, does that exist?
Do they even exist?
Yeah.
Xbox Live Arcade is different.
Yeah. Technically, Xbox Live Arcade is no longer a thing. It's all just games.
Right.
And then we know Microsoft's announced the ID at Xbox initiative, which is sort of carrying that torch. But whether or not we're still going to have these annual Augusts that are like filled with rad games like Braid and Limbo, still.
I don't know why they let that fall by the wayside. That was such a cool thing.
Yeah, it was such a great system. And this last one, where they closed it out, I guess would be the last one, really wasn't terribly strong.
There was Brothers, and then everything else was kind of...
Yeah, and then
in the past years, they had, Shadow Complex.
Limbo.
Yeah.
Great stuff. But can you give us an update on Super Time Force?
Yeah, I can. I actually I played it about a month and a half ago at the Double Fine event here in San Francisco, where they showcase a lot of indie games. The game still plays great. In case you don't know, it's that sort of... it's Capybara, the guys behind... Sword and Sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
It's their takes.
Yeah. Other games, like Might and Magic.
Heroes, yeah, I mean.
And Below,
the upcoming Xbox One game.
Right.
Yeah. So it's their take on sort of this modern version of Contra, where every time you die, you restart a level, but you fight alongside the ghost of your previous
play. Such a mind job.
And so by the end of it, you have eight ghosts fighting alongside you, and it's really rad. We learned just recently that Cappy is part of the ID at Xbox program, and that now it's also coming to Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
So both consoles early 2014. So. From what we've heard, the game is sort of finished.
Sort of finished.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely be playing it in the office here soon and sharing that with you. And I think everyone will be playing it, hopefully January, February.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following that game for, it seems like 2 years now.
I think it was at PAX.
It's been at multiple PAXs,
every year.
Yeah.
So in the game, it's always been really cool. Those guys deliver really strong games. So I think we don't have to worry about that one. You just have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about Strider HD?
Strider HD is actually, I feel like, the least missing of most of these games. We did see it at TGS, so we and Marty wrote a piece on it there at TGS, and he, you loved how it felt and how fluid it was and the sense of inertia, and I definitely experienced the same thing when I played it, I think it's about 2 weeks ago, no, a week ago now, I had a shot at a newer vertical slice of it than you had played, and it's looking terrific. I think there's a lot more options in it than people really understand right now.
This game is not on a lot of people's radar.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think Capcom's really saying much.
I think that's really the problem. It's not so much that it's missing in that we think it might not make it or that it hasn't been seen in a long time. It's more like it's just missing in terms of PR and in terms of support, right? The Capcom has not done a lot.
Which is weird because Capcom doesn't really have a whole lot on its plate right now. We don't know what's going on with Resident Evil. We don't know what's going out with Mega Man,
I mean, they've got a new Street Fighter.
Ultra
Street Fighter 4 is coming. They're doing a big event to push, that and their fighting game initiative, which, and as well they should. It's big for them.
Yeah.
But I mean, Strider is legitimately a very large, a very, I mean, I wouldn't say large, but he's a beloved, he's a beloved character for Capcom, and he's definitely one that the fans of the developer like have had their their eyes on. And
I'm not even sure. Is this a remake or is it a new Strider game?
It's a totally new Strider game, and what's nice about it, what I didn't think they conveyed too well from the initial trailers, and you and I talked about this a little bit, was that it's actually a Metroidvania. Like, there's backtracking, and you're actually going to gain new abilities and be able to access new areas, which is a little more like the NES Strider.
The NES game. Which is the arcade original with just like a side-scrolling hack and slash game.
And this has great combat just like that did. In fact, I think the combat in this, and I played a lot of that old arcade game and the Genesis game, the combat is even better now. The number of options that are available to you. You can switch between all these different cipher swords that have different effects. You can freeze guys and then use them as platforms, you use them as cover. You know, you got a fire sword that, you know, slashes through shields and all these crazy special abilities and mobility options. Like, it's very fluid and feels very satisfying, like, when you nail the combat. It's a lot more elements to it than the original arcade one.
And that game's sort of coming to everything under the sun.
Aside
from Wii U, I think, it was announced for almost every
right.
platform.
So originally,
cross-gen.
Why not just throw the Wii
That's
U
That's why I feel bad. I feel like Wii U gamers are very like nostalgic gamers.
Yeah, they're like retro gamers.
Yeah. And so, I feel like it should be on there.
I mean, the NES got, the Nintendo platform got a Strider game way before the NES Sega platform did, so it would totally make sense. But I think it's, you know, we're going to be seeing more of that game in very early 2014. Cool. People here in the office will be playing it, I would say, and hopefully not too far after for everyone else.
No release window yet?
Early 2014 is what they're saying, and that's going to be, originally they announced it on Xbox 360 and PS3 and PC, and I just got my hands on the PS4 version, and there's going to be an Xbox One version as well, it's going to be, I think...
Strider for everyone.
Yeah, Strider for everyone.
And Brian, you recently got to play Max, the Cursed Brotherhood.
Yes, yesterday I played it.
Oh.
Yeah.
No matter when you watch this, it's yesterday.
Yeah, all right.
You're playing it every day.
It's really cool. So it's not super difficult. It's not like a really reaction-based. It's very charming. It has this nice story of, like, you know, Max and his brother's in his room messing his room up, and he's like, I wish I didn't have a brother anymore. And then his wish comes true, and they get sucked into this really terrible world.
I think by the end of it, maybe he'll learn to appreciate.
Probably. You know.
This game tells a good tale.
Yeah.
But the whole point of it is that you have this magic marker. You may have heard of Max and the Magic Marker.
That's where it's that series, right?
It's not really like a sequel, but it's like the same character and like same mechanics.
Is it weird that I have no idea the series you guys are talking about?
It started on either Wii or DS.
Yeah, it was called Max and the Magic Marker.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so he used like the stylus to draw platforms.
So he gets this marker and he can draw like a tree branch or vines or like this water like torrent that will like shoot you through the air. As you go through these levels, you're basically just trying to figure out how to use these powers in conjunction to get through them.
Sure.
Because he doesn't have any way to fight the enemies. He has to outsmart them or destroy them.
That's kind of interesting.
Powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I only saw the early levels and then some of the more difficult stuff at the end. But it's pretty cool. It eases you into the powers as you go. And then by the end, you're chaining together things in ways that you wouldn't have at the beginning.
I played it at PAX East last year, I think. And it's more like a non-scary Limbo.
I think that's a good way of putting it, actually.
Yeah. It's not scary at all. It's really great looking game, but like very bright, colorful.
Did you play it on 360 or on Xbox One?
Xbox One.
Okay. So I played it on 360, a long time ago. Like I feel like it was E3 2012, it might have been PAX 2012, but it was a while ago and it was on 360. I liked how it felt. The only thing that was kind of weird was back then it had this like Okami mechanic where you froze time and then drew things and cut things and then you would proceed. And that was really weird to me, especially, you know, that would make sense on something like a Wii U or a Vita or a DS. But not having like a physical screen to draw on, again, like Okami, it felt weird. Sort of, you would have to like move the controller and then you would see where you are, where your pen is in the environment, and then you would have to adjust. Like it didn't feel extremely intuitive.
Yeah, when you look at it, you feel like maybe there's like motion controls or Kinect or something, but there isn't. But those moments have sort of survived. It's almost like an action moment. Like you'll fly off a waterfall and time will slow down and you'll be solving these puzzles as you're falling.
Okay.
You have to figure out a way to save yourself.
Did it ever feel like the drawing mechanic was like cumbersome, or did you always feel
it's really control? Like it's super easy to control. Like it's not like this cursor like moving wildly around. You can do the puzzles and not have too much of a difficult time.
Cool.
Did they give you any indication when it's coming out?
Yeah, soon.
I like all three of these games are like super nebulous. Yeah.
But no, it sounds like it's going to be like pretty early next year.
Yeah.
And on Xbox 360 as well.
I think Super Time Force is the one I'm most looking forward to.
I think I would agree.
Yeah, it's also been the longest time coming. I think that's the thing is that we have, it had this unique it made its big impression with a unique mechanic, right? Yeah. And then it's like, sorry, you can't play this. You still can't play this. You still can't play this.
But I actually want to play all these games.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I played Super Time Force at PAX East this year, I was like that. Yeah,
ton of fun.
Yes. We don't even really know anything about Trials Fusion, but whatever. More Trials.
Sure. Absolutely. I'll take it. That's a solid formula. It's hard to mess that up.
Just and I really want to see how the Metroidvania aspects of Strider HD pan out. I don't think either of us have seen that much of that element of the game yet.
You can't really tell in a small slice.
Exactly. A small vertical slice is really hard to tell that kind of thing. But if they really nail that, and if some of the newer environments they show like impress a little bit more, that's like my one gripe I think so far is that the artwork isn't like I can still remember what some of the stages in Strider and the arcade version looked like because they were so striking in terms of art. Yeah. I haven't had that experience yet with Strider HD where I look at it and I'm like, whoa, I'll remember that.
Yes.
But if they can deliver some of those memorable locales and some of that more memorable environmental art and they do the Metroidvania part well, I mean, the combat feels great and it looks really pretty right now. So I think I'm looking forward to that one too.
Thank you, gentlemen. Viewers, stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to GameScoop. This is the 2013 year-in-review edition of GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Justin Davis,
Scoop,
Andrew Goldfarb,
hey,
and Brian Altano. We're going to take a look back at the year that was, 2013, all the biggest news stories of the year. Our story begins in January.
That was really dramatic.
Yeah, most years usually do.
I think the biggest notable news of the year. What
I was just gonna say. What are these? Are these just like ones that you chose as being?
I would look back. You know, this is based on the stories that performed. They got the most traffic on IGN
for that month. Okay. Yeah, can we? Are we gonna guess? Or are you gonna read it to us and we talk?
Just let him do the show.
Jeez.
It would be a lot longer and more drawn out show if you guys guessed everyone.
Nope, not that. Try again.
Donkey Kong. Nope.
On January 23rd, THQ was dissolved.
Mm. Ooh, that was this year.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
There's a lot of them. We're going to get to it later, but this year was, you don't think about it as a year that a bunch of studios shut down, but it was, it's every year now.
There's more like that coming up, yeah. But like, that had kind of been a long time coming, right?
They were already bankrupt, yeah. They had filed for bankruptcy at that point. Yeah. This was then, it was going on like every day, but yeah, this was finally the point when all the rumors stopped, and that was the day when people actually publicly came out as the ones who were, you know, we got this one.
Blah, yeah, blah, blah. The studios were auctioned off, the properties.
Because Goldfarb and I worked on some projects in 2012 that were some features and infographics and news stories that were covering the decline of THQ. And at the time, there were still people there who hit us up, and they were like, hey, it's not that bad, all right?
Yeah.
Turn the ship around. You know, you have a down arrow in your infographic. Yeah. You got to fix that and turn it back up. And like a month later, it's like, oh, you're gone.
Yeah, the bankruptcy. Yeah, I mean, it's sad. I mean, that was a story for most of 2012. So it's crazy that it finally culminated.
It's interesting being like the final, like you're the final 36 employees of this place. And like, well, it's just strange like that then you are just there with the ship when it goes down.
It's not like, well, can we make a game? No,
and there was
you don't have any money to do anything.
There was one last little rattle from them too, because Darksiders and a couple other things that hadn't been sold came out a few months later.
Yeah,
I don't know if spoilers for later in the list potentially.
No spoilers here.
Okay.
On February 4th, Fire Emblem Awakening was released.
Oh, one of the best.
Yeah. A lot of people think that's their game of the year.
Yeah, interesting story with that one, too, because people couldn't find it on February 4th.
Yeah.
Most people could not find that
Nintendo
game
Nintendo did not anticipate demand for that one.
Other people said that they might have sort of illegally messed with that system a little to get people to download it instead. Mm.
Illegally?
Yeah.
Well,
they didn't shoot a cop or anything.
They could, like, Satoru Iwata's gonna be arrested.
What are you in here for? Oh, man.
Please understand. We just didn't print enough.
On February,
with Fire Emblem, I was going to say that we announced our Game of the Year 2013 nominations, and I don't know if you guys have been getting different things.
Nino Kuni and Fire Emblem.
Nino Kuni and Fire Emblem are the two games that I'm getting the most upset like tweets and messages about that we left off.
Yeah, Nino Kuni for sure. I haven't heard that much about Fire Emblem. I mean, it's funny because this was an insane year just for 3DS. Like, I mean, like the games that came out even after that are like serious contenders for Game of the Year too. So it's the list could have been like almost half 3DS, and you probably couldn't justify it.
Yeah, a lot of really high-profile AAA games came to 3DS this year. They reviewed great. We loved them. They still sold pretty well, but I mean, only 10 games can make our list at the end of the year.
Yep. This year, I remembered why I love Nintendo.
Yeah.
They totally won me back. I'm totally on
the Wii U.
Nintendo. I mean,
Wii U had
the Wii U a lot.
I mean, if you took the sales numbers aside, Wii U had a pretty good year.
Yeah, I mean, the first party games that came out for it were great. Yeah. I just think they need more.
Well, it had a pretty good second half of a year. Yeah. I think the first half was...
Yeah.
In every way, but actual business success.
Yes.
The console's doing great.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now it's just like a GameCube or an N64 again.
Yeah. GameCube is great.
I mean, it's true. Like, the games that come out for it are incredible, and I'm super excited for a lot of the things coming next year, but I just, you know, this is... The year when it struggled a little bit, and hopefully it finds its footing.
Yeah, in this, the year of the Luigi.
Which will continue into 2014.
That's a problem.
That was weird. On February 20th, the PlayStation 4 was announced.
Yeah.
Ooh. At their big event.
I ran a feature that's similar to this, or I'm running a feature that's the most read news stories of the year. And the PlayStation 4 reveal is not quite number one, but it is one of the absolute biggest, hugest in terms of traffic attention drivers all year long.
We waited for so long to finally have next-gen consoles.
Yeah, the big thing is that's the first one. Like, they went first. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Microsoft got a tremendous amount of attention too, but next-gen, like, this is the moment. February 20th was the moment where, like this, this is real. It's happening.
It was the elephant in the room that we'd known about, but no one had actually officially named as the PlayStation 4 yet.
Yeah, we didn't.
No
even
one
know
had
that.
Acknowledged.
Remember the Orbis?
Yeah, the Orbis. Nobody acknowledged it. Like, they were just like, "Oh, PS3 will be fun for years to come." We're like, "Just tell us about it."
Yeah,
you play this weird dumb game, but they're like, "No, we're not." Like, what? What's the PlayStation 4? Yeah.
Like, November before that, people were saying next gen consoles in their game announcements that they couldn't specify yet.
And I remember that day. I mean, we all worked until like 11 o'clock that night. And it was a weird debut though, because it wasn't really about the games as much as we wanted it to be.
Well, they held
a lot back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they didn't design the console until E3.
And that was the big four. And it's funny that Drive Club ended up not even coming out, but it was just Nat, Killzone, Infamous, and Drive Club, I guess.
Yeah, and they had that big wall of logos of all the people that were working on things for the PS4.
I mean, they had, like, Deep Down. There were some games there. But, I think we wanted, like, we were just so ready that we probably wanted, like, even more than they showed.
That console went from literally not even being officially acknowledged to out and in stores in 9 months.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Totally. And obviously,
Microsoft
Xbox is even
crazy
less.
Than that. Yeah. It's cool. It's 6 months almost of the day for Xbox, I think.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
On March 5th, Tomb Raider was rebooted.
And I turned 27.
Ah, there you go.
All right.
Nice.
But yes, Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider is still my game of the year. Yeah. Just me personally.
It's probably Justin Davis's personal game of the year choice as well.
It is not my game of the year. Not even close, but I really enjoyed it. But there was a lot of really good games this year. Mm-hmm. To me, I mean, it was when I look back on Tomb Raider, I had an incredible time playing it. I thought that actually traversing that world was probably more fun than anything I'd done in the game this year. The better your character got, it felt like Resident Evil 4 and Metroid Prime and all these wonderful things put
together. Exactly the kind of game I want to play.
Yeah. But then I think about the story and the characters, and it fell apart a little bit for me. But I mean, everything else was right there. So I'm really... interested to see where they go next.
That game's really divisive. You know, I've been reading up on impressions of our Game of the Year nominees, and Tomb Raider is the one that some people are like, yeah, right on, and then half the people are like, that's the one game that needs to be stricken from IGN's list.
It seems to be Device 6?
Well, a lot of people just don't know what Device 6 is, but people that do love it. Tomb Raider it's my personal choice for Game of the Year. I thought it played, it's like Uncharted, but plays better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
And you have some Batman style, you know, non-linearity, but some people think it's an example of everything that's wrong with modern game design, where it's all just like flash and not really a lot of substance, and like, you're parachuting through the trees, but it doesn't really.
So I saw their point when we only saw trailers for that game, and I was really worried it was just sort of this like tunnel run QTE, you know, never-ending scripted bullshit cutscene thing, but it really wasn't. Like the way that game opened up, it was more than probably The Last of Us opened up, or more than any Uncharted game opened up. Like, just being able to be like, there's a secret up there. How do I get to it? I have all the time in this world, in this huge island, and all these tools at my disposal. Yeah. It was absolutely not just like, run from the boulder and run from the plane. Like,
but it had that too.
It did. It did. So
to me, it was like the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to play it again on my PS4.
Yeah, me too, Kim.
Oh, the Definitive Edition.
With the hair physics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
March was a good month, because on March 26th, BioShock Infinite was released.
Right.
Is that your game of the year, Andrew?
It's my top three. I really need to decide what I'm actually voting for. Yeah. It might be, though. But yeah, I mean, that was crazy. I mean, that game was announced in 2010, I think. Might have even been before that.
Oh, man.
And so it was probably in development for even a year or two before that. So yeah, I mean, that was a long time coming.
BioShock Infinite reveal event was weird. We don't need to dwell on it for a long time, but it was just a weird thing.
I mean, it's
the reveal event.
So
back in 2010
in New York, there was, and that was when they fake people out, so the trailer begins with, like, a Big Daddy, but then, like, it gets crushed, and you realize it's a fish tank that's in the city of Columbia, and they reveal it's not set in Rapture. Yeah, and I mean, the game changed a lot. We saw so many trailers leading up to that, and, like, then those elements didn't even necessarily end up in the game in the same way. But, I mean, it's crazy that could have come out so much earlier this generation. Like, this year was so interesting because, like, well, I mean, a little bit of late last year, too, but, like, we finally got, like, Duke Nukem, and we finally got, like, Bioshock, and we finally got these games that were just, like, languishing in development hell for so long. Yeah, I mean, better.
Bioshock's weird because I had the total opposite experience with it that I did with Tomb Raider in that everything... Tomb Raider, I absolutely loved playing it, but a lot of the lore and the characters and the world around it, I didn't really... go wild about, whereas Bioshock, like, the art and the character design and the story and the music and everything in place there was fantastic. But when it came down to just running around and shooting people in that game and throwing electric bolts at them, I got really bored with it after, like, just a few hours.
Yeah.
So
it's a weird, I mean, this year's so interesting because Last of Us, Tomb Raider, and Bioshock are these three, I mean, they're Last of Us and Tomb Raider are obviously easier to compare apples to apples, but I think They're part of this, like, personal preference thing that, like, for me, Tomb Raider was, like, so repetitive. I got so sick of fighting waves of dudes every time I came into a room. Like, that game is nowhere near my top 10 for the year. But, like, so many people feel that way about Bioshock, and I've talked to a lot of people who feel that way about Last of Us. Like, it's really interesting seeing just, like, what combat and gameplay style suits certain people. I find that, like, one of the most interesting parts of the
game. I thought The Last of Us was, like, you know, the perfect balance of all of those things, where I could say it's really fun to play. I don't think it was as fun as Tomb Raider, and the world's really cool, and I don't think it's as cool as Bioshock, but it's the best of all those worlds in one package to me.
Interesting.
Zelda's still better, though.
Yeah.
On April 3rd, Star Wars 13:13 was canceled.
Oh.
That hurts, and especially once we saw more of it later and kind of what it was evolving into, and like when you find out Boba Fett would have been in it, would have been the focus, like... LucasArts in general, because that was the day LucasArts closed, right? Yeah. Like, that's such a crazy legacy that was, like, suddenly, it's like the quote
LucasArts
about...
LucasArts and THQ.
Alderaan.
Millions of voices.
Yeah, millions of voices suddenly,
LucasArts is a big bummer. I mean, they were not really allowed to do anything other than Star Wars for a long time, but that's a studio that has, like, an incredible legacy, and you don't see...
That legacy lives on with Double Fine and, like, Broken Age.
Yeah,
that's true. But I just think about stuff like, you know, Day of the Tentacle or, like, whatever, like, these other games. Like, these old LucasArts point-and-click adventure games. Like, that's a studio and a company that had, like, real clout and history behind it. And you just don't see... Usually they end up getting bought by somebody. Like, maybe it goes right or maybe it goes poorly, but it's weird to see one just peter out like
that. Yeah, to me, like, a big part of playing a game now and playing games growing up was, even before the title screen, was, like... seeing this logo fade in and knowing the sort of like level of quality you could expect from it. And I saw that LucasArts logo a million times growing up, you know, starting up so many games, and just to know that one day it's gone is just weird to me. It's like I don't look back at like Acclaim the same way, or like the Orion Pictures logo before movies or something like that. But yeah, I miss LucasArts.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird having that happen so close to THQ, because that felt like that first half of the year was like two major players in this industry were just suddenly gone, which is weird.
Yeah.
And especially that was April was weird because there are these like quarterly earnings calls we cover, and that probably like a couple weeks after that was kind of the first time that we didn't have to worry about THQ and that LucasArts was wiped off the map, and it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird reflecting on that first part of the year. This is good,
right? On April 19th, The Evil Within was announced, Bethesda's survival horror game. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, still don't know a ton about it.
No.
Now that they've shown like real gameplay from it, I'm like way more excited than I was then, because that was when they showed that like terrifying trailer with like
that trailer is incredible. It's ridiculous.
If you haven't seen that, there's no gameplay though.
I mean, stop GameScoop. Go watch the trailer.
Yeah, and the
I'm putting B-roll over it right now.
I don't know what I'm doing here. How does the video go?
The trailer was like incredible and really like set the tone really well, but we didn't see gameplay for months after that.
Yeah.
I
still think the survival horror genre is like criminally underutilized nowadays. It was a thing that we got so much more of back in the PS2 era, and it's tough to pull off
these days, though, right? Like, that genre thrives on the player not having a lot of power and like intentionally controlling a little bit awkwardly or slowly, and like that's how you make it work. But like, games don't work that way. Like, you think about something like Dead Space, where you have to make your character powerful and capable of dealing with these threats, but then that undermines the tension, and modern survival horror is tricky.
Yep.
It's really, it's become more about games like Amnesia, or it's sort of pulled away from
Resident Evil, I guess. I like the notion of vulnerability as like a gameplay mechanic. Mm-hmm. I thought it worked well in The Last of Us. I thought it worked exceptionally well in Gone Home, which is just sort of like, I don't know what's around each corner or what's behind each door.
Ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, taking power away from the players and letting them experience that is really cool. So I
hope Gone Home Spooky Broom.
It is.
And then on May 21st, the Xbox One was revealed.
Much later, 3 months after
the PlayStation. It was crazy. We were waiting, because so PlayStation sent out this invitation the week before. They were like, the 20th, whatever day, is the future PlayStation revealed.
We're not telling you what you're announcing, but you're going to like it.
We all knew, exactly. But like Microsoft, we waited for that invite like week after week week. It was like crazy. Like, everyone's like, oh, they have to do it before GDC. And then March passed, and it was like, okay, well, they're not going to get it too close to E3. But then, by the time it hit, it was... It was right before E3, and only 6 months, almost to the day, before it actually hit stores.
And we definitely, I mean, who knows for sure? Like, only Microsoft knows what their plans were, but like the rumors that we were hearing was that that event was pushed back.
Yeah.
Like they were planning on having it earlier, and then it got delayed.
Now that was a weird day. Like that was
reveal was a debacle.
It was atrocious. Like I remember sitting here going,
"The start of months of
I mean, all of their DRM stuff started slipping out. All of their they spent an hour talking about Riley the dog from Call of Duty. they focused so much on music and video streaming.
You're gonna have
services.
A TV guide on your TV.
Yeah, and you know, like it was so strange because it really started my like. Era of being down on the Xbox One, which did not end until I opened up my Xbox One and plugged it in, was like, man, this is pretty cool. They did everything they could to make me feel like it wasn't going to be.
Yeah, they really, like, not only was it confusing and they were leaving details out, but that day in particular, like in the weeks and months after, it got really bad, but that day in particular, they were literally contradicting each other. Like, two Microsoft spokespeople, one in the UK and one in the US, would literally say opposite things. Like, of course it can play used games, and no, it can't play used games.
Don Matrick was coming out saying, he's like, hey, we think backwards compatibility is backwards. And we're like, dude, shut up.
Yeah.
Like,
Well, it's also just like the tone
deaf. I'm going to Zynga.
The tone deaf nature, that's true, of them being like, you know, really playing up Kinect and focusing a lot of time on it. Like, who gives a shit? If I can put your Kinect stuff in your box, no one cares.
Yeah.
But like, to really spend so much time talking about something that people are hostile to, like that core gamers don't like and don't want, is just weird and dumb.
Like, well, plus, it's like they missed who that event is for. The whole point of that event isn't for the mainstream. It's for the core gamers. Those are the people watching. Yeah. So like, to cater it to the mainstream taste was just a bad decision.
Yeah. The mainstream will hear about it in USA Today and Entertainment Weekly.
Right. Exactly.
On June 2nd, The Red Wedding traumatized Game of Thrones viewers, like myself, who had not read the books.
No, maybe, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, very I didn't know that. Day. Did you lose your mind?
Yes, I did lose my mind.
I lost my mind despite every single person I've ever met being like, oh man, tonight's The Red Wedding. Like, I don't know what that is, but now I know something's going to happen.
I had no idea what was going to happen.
No idea. I was like, oh, this is a fun episode. Oh my God!
Yeah. No spoilers here, but yeah.
Well.
Everyone should watch.
Hey.
Well, now a couple spoilers.
June 10th were all the E3 press conferences, so lots of news coming out of them. We got to see the PS4 design finally, we got the price.
And the no used games.
Yeah.
I pre-ordered mine on the spot that moment. I think you did too, right?
Me too,
That E3, I've been to 11 E3s, as I often bring up. Every year we go to E3, this is my...
another tally mark into your eye.
But it was one of the craziest ones in terms of just sheer spectacle and craziness. And like that Sony press conference was just nuts. It was nuts.
Yeah. It felt like it was like watching WrestleMania.
It really did feel like
these two titans are fighting and one of them, you know, gets the top rope, turns the match around or whatever. It was my favorite E3 I've ever worked. It was so much fun to be a part of.
Yeah. $399 US and people lost their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was also, I mean, we got The Division, which is another big end of Ubisoft thing. Like,
Well, it was just, Microsoft's, their conference went first, and we all thought the conference was really strong, we were really happy with it, but then Sony, you're just like...
When Sony had the here's how you trade used games,
that was
shut it down.
Shut it down.
Thursday.
Yeah, as a Nintendo fan, E3 was really weird for me to wake up. Like, what was it, like Monday morning and just watch a trailer with everybody else. Like, there was no crowd. Like, you need that, like, hey, here's Smash Brothers, and everyone's like, woo, you need that. Like, that's a big part
people
of it.
People crying when Zelda's announced.
That was one that wasn't on the list, was in May when Nintendo said that, when they were like, we're not doing an E3 press conference. And it was like... Like, that was, like, right, I think, before Microsoft announced the Xbox One, or maybe it was even right after, but it was just such a weird thing, because it was like, okay, so there are these two next-gen consoles. Nintendo, at the time, we didn't even think would be there, but then they did a Nintendo Direct.
It's still a great E3.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, this is one of my favorite E3s. I've only been to, this is my sixth, I guess.
So Microsoft had their E3 press conference on June 10th. 8 days later, no, sorry, I cannot math. 9 days later, Microsoft backtracks on all their Xbox One policies.
It was nine days?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, it's
they spent all of E3, the entire show, doubling down on their policies, and then 13 days later said, no, all that stuff that we said was absolutely essential to making the next Xbox run. Yeah. None of that's actually
true. A lot of people had a really bad 12 days.
Yeah,
it was
can
like,
you imagine being,
like you're not going home until you reverse engineer everything we've spent years doing.
Well, I also don't. I mean, the Xbox One is gonna be fine. Halo is gonna be awesome. You know, it's gonna have lots and lots of awesome games. But like, I cannot believe how badly they fucked up.
I read the Xbox One's the most wanted single item on Amazon right now.
Like, who knows who's gonna
selling
win?
Well,
both those consoles are gonna do great.
And they already are.
What I mean. And they're gonna continue to in the next year.
I'd be tempted to say that all that Microsoft business would be the story of the year, but like it doesn't seem to have hurt sales that
much. It didn't matter.
Yeah, for sure.
It's hard to say, who knows where they would have been without that stuff.
It's sort of like the year before when PSN went down for a month and a half, and we were like, oh man, they're done forever, and then games came out and people bought them.
Because
like,
we live in this bubble. There are so many people who literally don't even know that that happened. Like, who
somebody says, Call of Duty doesn't work again.
Is that what the people who are outside of the bubbles?
They're all Italian.
I get those calls all the time. Why won't my Call of Duty work? I'm like, PSN's down. What's the PSN? Forget it. Make sauce.
On August 15th, Plants vs. Zombies 2 was released as a free-to-play game, which I think is a sign of a negative direction that the industry is going in.
Yeah.
I think that was a really big mistake. That was a beloved game. Everybody loved Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah.
We waited for a sequel for so long, and it was kind of they messed it up with the free-to-play business model.
If you put a gun to my head and you said name 50 games that were released this year, I don't think I would have remembered that Plants vs. Zombies 2 was one of them. And that's a sequel to a game that I've probably played for 100 hours.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't get that far in it. I haven't spent any money on it. I got to like the... I cleared like that first little map or whatever, but yeah, it was missing something, like that magic. Like I'm playing Peggle 2, right?
Right.
Peggle 2 still has the magic that Peggle 1 had.
Yeah.
Plants vs. Zombies 2 is missing that.
Stuff makes me really sad. You say, like, you pointed out it's a big mistake, and what jumps out to me is, like, it probably wasn't. Like, here's the deal. That's why the situation just makes me sad. I know what you're going to say, like, but... So I thought you were just gonna say that like
elephants are the best animal, clearly.
No, I'm saying like people insiders tell me that they know it was a mistake. Like but it didn't work it didn't work out well for them.
It's right. I'm assuming that game's making money. Like
probably not as much as they wanted. Plus it's just not like people love Plants vs. Zombies. Nobody loves Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yeah. And I mean, this was them going like, this is a franchise now. Like we're branching this off. We're doing spin-offs and sequels and everything, and the first step was like, hey, remember your backyard? Now it can time travel. I'm like, I don't really care about
zombies. I like the central conceit. I like all of it other than, like, I just think it was a mistake for that particular brand new free-to-play. I don't see free-to-play as, like, an industry-wide mistake, but for that brand, people would have paid the premium price, I think. People were ready to pay $5 for it. And
we're in a situation where, like, everyone in this room would rather have Plants vs. Zombies that they pay for. But the free one probably makes PopCap more money. And so it's like, what are we supposed to do with that information? It's like, well, it just kind of sucks. Like, it just sucks. Like,
that sucks. On August 28th, Nintendo announced the 2DS.
Yeah. Which, traffic-wise, I believe is the second biggest
story.
Second biggest news story of the year
Nintendo
on IGN.
Announced
so this was August 28th?
Yeah. August 28th.
Okay, so August 27th, Reggie Fils-Aimé showed me the Nintendo 2DS, and it was the
one believed you.
Yeah. No, you like, didn't believe
it. No, but no one in the office did.
I didn't believe Reggie. Jose and I were sitting there, and he
crazy
comes in.
For this one, Reggie.
He comes in, and he sits down, and he goes, and with the Wind Waker HD coming to platform, and blah, 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 and that's why we have the sales across, and that's why today I'd like to show you the Nintendo 2DS. And I was like, you fucking with me. And he pulls his bag out, and he pulls his flat pancake DS that somebody broke under a truck. And he's like, it's $129, and it's got no 3D. And I was like, what the fuck?
And I mean,
Andrew Goldfarb, I thought you were going to lose your mind.
Nobody believed us.
You're on the phone with Brian and Jose.
Because Jose's the one who messed up. Because we believe Brian full on. And then Jose texted us and he was like, oh, he's just trolling you. And that's what messed us up because Jose made us
trust
you.
We came in from
you
Nintendo.
Came in and drew it?
Yeah, we independently, you guys separated Jose and I. And you're like, each of you draw it and then hold up the drawing. And you're like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a triangle. It's a wedge. You can put it under your door.
All of that said, it was so ridiculous. Like, people thought it was insane. And then it came out alongside Pokemon and has sold really, really well.
Do we know? I don't know.
I mean, it is gone everywhere. Like, anecdotally, it is not in stock.
I would really like to know how it's selling.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because in NPD, it seemed like.
It's so accessible. It was $99 on Black Friday.
Like, but it's also like, what is.
Entry level console with Pokemon, that is like so smart for them to have.
What does success versus failure look like for the 2DS? Like, does it matter? Like, do they need to sell 100 million or if they don't sell that many, it's like, whatever, who cares?
Yeah, a lot of people were down on it. I thought it was a great idea. It's like, the more people you can get playing your system, the more games get made for your system. So
I'm
fine
with
that.
Like, it's not for
anyone
in this room.
But of course.
So the 2DS, and since
it's for you in like 3 years. It's not for any of the rest of us.
That's true. Since it's flat and it's 2D, like, that's how they save money. But there's other cost-cutting measures in the 2DS. It doesn't have a Wi-Fi switch. It's just done with software. There's other stuff like that. Like, if they would have released a cheaper clamshell 3DS, hey, we made a 3DS, it's still a clamshell, but it's not 3D anymore. We took the Wi-Fi switch out, we did some of that stuff, and now it's this cheaper price. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah, the 3DS something, like some word that didn't exist. Because that's the problem. The 2DS name is partially.
I cannot believe how bad Nintendo naming and marketing has been lately.
Right? I still think they missed an opportunity to bring back the Game Boy name and call it the Game Boy DS.
That would have been awesome. Especially if they had made it gray with the purple buttons, I would have been there day one.
But then it's even more confusing because it only plays. You have to buy a game marked 3DS to play in the
2DS. Yeah, I promise you, they're like, wait, I bought my son a 2DS. You're trying to sell me this 3DS game. He doesn't have a 3DS. And then some GameStop click is like, no, look, like, it's fine. Your 2DS can play these 3DS games.
It's just like, okay, so what about this Wii U game for my Wii? He's like, well, no, that one.
The first time I saw the logo
that's
that said,
real life.
I saw a logo that said available exclusively on Nintendo 3DS and 2DS.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not exclusively. I don't know what that means.
These are real things that are happening
now. The real issue there was they reneged on their, I mean, they put out a system that made children blind. That was their thing. Like, did 3DS move?
Who went blind from playing 3DS?
No.
You have a picture of him.
I have him right here. Look at the camera and let them know what they did to you. It was them saying, man, we got to have people of all ages playing this, but the thing on the box says we can't give this to somebody under 7 because it might kill them in the eyes.
Well, we also, like, and now 3DS games, like, Zelda tells me to stop all the time. It's like, you've been playing a while. Do you want to take a break? And I'm like, oh, fuck, like, I started and finished one dungeon.
Yeah. Like six, if you go from one windmill to another, it automatically says that. So sometimes that's like 6 minutes apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the game, I'm like, I'll tell you when I'm done.
Yeah.
On September 17th, Grand Theft Auto V was released.
Finally.
Probably the biggest game of the year. Made $800 million in one day.
Yeah. And I mean, it was the reveal of that game was like the hardest day. Like, that was just like the biggest, most insane day when they finally revealed that game. And there was so much speculation around it. Like,
undeniably the biggest game of the year. I'm not saying best or anything like that, but biggest not even close.
Possibly of like.
It's like
the past
here
five
and number
years.
Two is like over. It's off camera right now. Like in terms of the amount of just buzz and attention.
I forget who I was talking to, but it was I was talking to a publisher recently, and they're like, "Man, you guys were writing GTA stories like all year. Like, how do we get that kind of attention on IGN?" And I was like, "Put out 2 screenshots every 2 weeks for a year, and you will always be
also make a Grand Theft Auto game
and make a GTA." Yeah,
yeah, that doesn't work for like Pancake Madness on
mobile
or whatever.
It doesn't. But it was
Pancake
like
Madness a real game.
I mean, it has to be a real game.
How many days did we come into work and it was like new screenshots today? We got to do rewind theaters. We're doing news stories. We're doing videos and blah blah blah. We're doing a game scoop and a beyond. And you know, there was
people were so hungry for information. Like, we were delivering to our audience what they wanted.
Exactly.
You know, we got accused of you were all over GTA and lapping up everybody's information. Like, we run a news story and we look at the traffic and it's not about clickbait or whatever. It's about if we put up a story that, you know, a million people read, we put up something that a million people were interested in that information on, and GTA was that game, man. Like, people couldn't get enough of it.
It's also not even just, I mean, we can measure other things other than just pure traffic. It's the engagement. So it's people are on those articles so long because they're actually reading them and interested in them. So it's like,
watching the videos.
Yep. Yeah. All those things come to play for sure.
And in terms of like how dense that game was, there was more to talk about in that game than probably any other game this year, aside aside from Dota, well, because, which is all strategy-based.
You're the one who always says it, right? Like, not that GTA is my favorite game, but if someone was like, I have an Xbox 360 and I can only buy one game and I have to play it for a year, like, GTA 5 is the answer, because there's so much to do in it, and as a result, whenever they released a screenshot, there were, like, 70 things to talk about with it, because it's like, okay, like, this could be in single player, this could be, you know, when the multiplayer was revealed, that was crazy.
September 20th is when Nintendo announced the Wii U price cut and the Wind Waker bundle, which I bought. In love.
Did he? Oh, that's the one you ended up getting.
Yeah. Awesome. The week of September 25th is when Valve made their Steam Machine announcement, Steam OS, and revealed the controller.
Which was really cool, but I feel like hyping it up the way they did and using the number three, it was almost anticlimactic. Like, if they had just come out and said all of that, I think it would have been almost bigger than it ended up being. Because by hyping it, like, we didn't know what to expect. We thought it was going to be something like so game-changing, and that has the potential to be long-term, but in terms of that initial announcement, I don't think it was quite there yet.
I don't know what to make about Steam Machines. The announcement was strange. Valve, just their aloofness, or just, you know, we don't care whether we get good press or bad press. Here's our thing. Hope you like it. Okay. Bye. Like, they just don't care as much. They don't have, like, a media strategy as much as, like,
and
other companies
It sucks because I don't know, like, what their message is right now, and I still don't know, like, a Steam Machine, do I have to build that myself? Well, is that something I can just buy in a store and play PC games on with a controller on
That's the confusing thing, though. This wasn't the announcement. That's what is the most confusing part of all of this is that the actual
Steam
announcement
OS.
Is at CES in January. This was just, like,
software.
Meant to be
software
like, hey, this is what we're doing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, like, they made people more confused. Now it'll be will have been for 4 months by the time they do their actual.
Well,
Steam
the controller, and we didn't see it then, but we've, you know, we have some experience with the controller. Scott Lowe played with the controller, and it's good. Like, it's really, really good and fun. But even Valve is really awesome. They're like, hey, we're really proud of this controller. We think it is going to change how you play games. Like, but will you be able to win at Dota with it? And they're like, nah, probably not.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, really, like, blunt about things in that way. And I'm like, that's cool, but, like... Yeah.
When they do the full platform unveil in January, it'll be really interesting to see what their actual, like, strategy is for this. Because that's when we need to finally, like, who are making these things? Sure. They say they have all of these different hardware partners, but it's, like, there's going to be this wide price range. It's going to be kind of confusing because after a certain point, it's, like...
Well, it's, like...
If this is $500, like, the quality of that PC, you could probably just build your own PC for cheaper or stronger.
I've been saying the same thing since they announced this. I think it seems weird and strange, but Valve hasn't done anything wrong in, like, a decade. So it's, like, I guess I just have to keep holding on.
Yeah,
like,
so that's I would trust nobody else with this other than them, so...
On September 29th, the best TV show of all time ended.
Ooh, wow. Was that September 29th?
Yeah.
Feels like it was like a month ago.
And then on October 1st, GTA Online went live.
We should
and
say it was
totally
in case
busted. GTA Online was totally busted.
Yeah, and another one we left out was in March was SimCity launched and was totally launched, busted. Yeah. And it was like that was kind of a thing this year.
There was
like,
a third one this year too. I don't remember. I would need to look it up.
Last year was Diablo.
Diablo was a big issue too.
But I mean, it's like most big things that launch seem to have that problem. And now Battlefield 4 is still struggling.
Battlefield 4
was going to say October 29th. Yeah, Battlefield 4 is out. That's been a terrible problem for EA.
EA had a rough year.
It caused EA stock to drop. There's a...
A pending class action.
Claiming that they defrauded investors and claiming like how well it was running. And
see, I felt bad about that too, because that's my Italian Call of Duty friends were calling me up and they're like, what should I get? And I'm like, oh, if you're getting a PS4, you know you should get Battlefield. I heard it's really good. And then a month later, they're like, I can't play it yet.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is really awkward.
Yeah. Back to that sauce.
Yeah.
On November...
It's a spicy meatball. I don't know.
On November 15th, PlayStation 4 is released.
Yay.
I think it sells 1 million on day one.
It's a good day.
A week later, Xbox One is released, sells 1 million on day one.
Well, the PS4 was only in the US, the Xbox was worldwide.
Yeah.
For what that's worth.
Dan and I were talking about this at lunch about how the companies parse their numbers in weird ways. Where, like, the PlayStation 4 sold more in the US, but the Xbox sold faster, but only because it was out less. And this weird spin, and it makes it hard to sort out what's what. But the bottom line is
there's a lot of moving at goalposts.
Well, like, but every single console that hits shelves is being sold. Like, that's it. Like, they're all being sold, so it's like it won't
It's all good for the industry. In the end, it's good for everybody.
Until there's, like, supply on store shelves, that's the only time we'll really get a feel for, like, what is the actual demand for these two consoles.
It is incredible that, in all likelihood, we'll end this year with both of those consoles either very close to or past 3 million.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
That is amazing. Like, that's
it's like
such
that's
a good
what's
start.
The Wii U at in the US?
Well, the Wii U worldwide is at, I believe, 4.3 million.
Oh, man.
And with a year head start. So, yeah, I mean, that puts in perspective how well these consoles are doing.
It is interesting that, you know, it seems like they really have their ducks in a row in terms of buttoning up. Like, PS4s have been resupplied more than once of Xboxes. Like, consoles used to just be like, you can't buy a Wii, sorry. You'll get one in 9 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was impossible to find, and part of that's just due to the catastrophic demand. But it just feels like, even though there's incredibly high demand for these consoles, like, I feel like you'll be able to get them early next year. Like,
if you really want one, you can get one. I don't think that was really the case with the Wii U, outside of, like, you're spending $700 on it or robbing it.
On the Wii.
Oh, the Wii, not the Wii.
And they also used to do, like, they would do the forced bundles.
Right.
Like, even, like, last gen, like, PS3s, you'd be like, hey, you can get a PS3 today if you buy $300 worth of games. And, like, that stuff just seems to not be as common
anymore. I mean, it's because right now, I think it's like a weird thing, because it's also 8 years later, and now you can literally carry an app on your phone that keeps track of where it's in stock. You can drive there really quickly. Like, if you want it badly enough, you can get it right now. I think you're right.
Yeah, we were talking about this recently, too, but, like, the eBay market completely dried up and changed about that stuff, too. Like, I mean, it's just not the same
Homeboy
anymore.
In the UK.
Except for this guy,
$750 for a photo. The eBay listing clearly said this is a photo of Xbox One. He's like, oh.
Yep. And that's the thing. That story, it amazes me, because, like, it is shitty that someone sold that, and it sucks that this guy got taken advantage of. But when I was looking at that eBay listing, I was like, it does say it.
The headline is basically, like, dumb guy makes big mistake.
Oh, yeah. And also, he ended up getting a free one. He got a refund.
He got his money back, and he got a free console. So let's not feel bad for this idiot.
Right.
Okay, no. He made out like a bandit. You play dumb, you get rewarded in this world.
That's the immediate first thought that crossed my mind is, I'm like, now that the news is picking this up, there's zero chance that this dude does end up with, like, a free Xbox One.
Yeah,
for sure.
I don't even think it came from Microsoft. It came from, like, a retailer. Or
something. Oh, really?
Yeah.
The same day that the Xbox One was released, A Link Between Worlds was released.
What a good day for video.
22 years after A Link to the Past.
Yeah, that was a weird weekend for me, because I was sitting there going, I bought a PS4 a week ago. I got an Xbox One sitting right here. They're all hooked up. They're beautiful, amazing systems. I'm going to play Zelda.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Zelda game, in my opinion, is the best Zelda game in a decade. Yeah. I mean, I think it's the best one since Wind Waker. I think it's better than Twilight Princess, better than Skyward Sword, better than Phantom Hourglass, Fairy Tracks. Like, it is just so good, and it gets it right. It gets the formula right.
I don't like the item rental, but I like everything else about that game.
The item rental was barely a factor, because you end up buying them so quickly.
Sure. Damon, you're saving that game for your flight to Japan, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to have so much fun.
I think you'll love it. It's funny, because I don't really know that many people who haven't played Link to the Past, and so I wonder how much of it is that nostalgia coming back, but...
Have you not played Link to the Past?
No, I have.
Oh. No, but that's what I was going to say. As someone who has, you'll love it immediately, because the music and everything about it reminds you of it so quickly, and I don't know if that's, like, manipulative or something. Like, maybe that's just because I have so much love for that game.
Well, I mean, what I saw was sort of divisive, like, but some people, like Jose Otero, our Nintendo guy, was like, I don't like that it
me too.
Relies on that stuff. Yeah, you too. And me, I didn't really feel like it dragged it down. I thought it sort of boosted it up a little bit. So, I mean, I think
they had an opportunity. Like, it's finally, like, when you're a kid and, like, Zelda's top-down, then it goes to this other thing. Ocarina of Time comes out. You're like, well, top-down Zeldas are over. That's just done. And then you get another one, and it's like, oh, like, they can do this. They can go back and, like, modernize this old thing, and, like, it's the best. But then I wish, like, but then it's like, okay, so there's a swamp in the bottom and a desert over here, and the Lost Woods are up here, and the puzzles and everything are all different. But, like, it does mess up that feeling of adventure, like, when the Lost Woods are in the top left. Like, there could have been anything up there instead of, like, something that I know what's up there, and I know where Death Mountain is. Yeah. And, like, I do wish that they would have done that exact same game but done it brand new.
Sure.
Yeah, this isn't a spoiler cast on Link Between Worlds. A couple things to wrap up in December. Telltale announced two new game series, Tales from the Borderlands and Game of Thrones. So now they've got four episodic series.
And I've been scooped one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is crazy that this is the year that Telltale became
so
much bigger than that. I mean, like, 2 years ago, Telltale was a studio that you kind of rolled your eyes at, you know, Jurassic Park and Back to the Future.
Well, they were really spotty. Like, people loved Sam and Max.
Sam and Max was
great. Then they had a few, several Jurassic,
people forget, or maybe they don't forget, but, like, Jurassic Park was bad. Yeah. Like, it wasn't just, like, sort of mediocre. Like, that was a bad game.
But that's what I mean. And then in 2011, or I guess 2012, rather, last year, Walking Dead blew everyone's minds. Like, pretty universally loved, I would say, that game. And, like, not everyone gave it Game of the Year, but it was on everyone's nominee list. And, like, pretty much everyone with a heart loves that game. And I think it changed Telltale as a company. They grew, they nearly doubled in size this year. Like, now they have four projects going on at once. Like, it's kind of incredible. Just, you know, you talk about THQ going down, you talk about LucasArts going down, But then kind of at the end of the year, you have this kind of uptick of an awesome studio being rewarded for being creative and being able to be good.
It's weird. I don't like associate them with game studios anymore. I associate them as like a TV network.
Yeah.
Like they're like, oh man, when's that new season of Walking Dead hitting? Oh, when's that new season of Wolf Among Us? Or when's the next episode of that coming
out? Like a TV network where they're really spotty about releasing episodes.
Yeah.
So,
like, it doesn't come every Sunday night or anything
and
like that.
And it's like on one cable provider, but you have to wait another week to get it on the other cable provider.
And the episode stutters a lot.
Am I the only one that thought that the Borderlands announcement in the face of everything else was sort of strange?
Oh yeah.
Really, like, Walking Dead is one of the biggest properties on the earth, and so is Game of Thrones, and now it's like Borderlands is a big deal, and that's a good big selling game, but it's like,
it's not a point and click
adventure.
I don't mean in that sense, actually. I didn't mean that it's adapting, you know, this big action franchise. I just mean the size of the brand. Like, some people thought
compared to like Game of Thrones.
Some people thought that Game of Thrones might be Star Wars.
But neither Fables, right? Like Fables. Right.
I guess that's true.
And I mean, the funny thing with for me, it was the weirder, nerdy business question of like, so
how did that work?
Gearbox owns Borderlands, but 2K publishes it. 2K has nothing to do with this Telltale game, and so it's like just kind of interesting as a precedent for like how like cross promotion with brands works.
That was a pain in the ass for like six lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
For like a while, they're like,
all right, they got paid.
Do you have 20? To?
Yeah, yeah.
They got money.
Plenty of blah, blah, blah.
We ran a survey on what people's most anticipated 2014 games are, and in the adventure game category, it's all Telltale stuff.
Yeah, the top three. Yeah, Telltale. This is also the year of Luigi.
And this the year of Luigi.
Yeah. So we had Luigi's Mansion, new Super Luigi U. Now we're getting Dr. Luigi. We just found.
We got Mario and Luigi Dream Team, Dr. Luigi. Yeah, yeah.
We had the some of the worst sales in Nintendo history on a platform. third parties dried up left and right. Yamauchi died. Like, this was not a good year of Luigi for Nintendo. I mean, Luigi's kind of your second tier, you know, he's the bumbling guy, he's scared all the time.
It's awkward.
Yeah,
it's
late. Let's make next year the year of Mario. Let's do it.
Yeah, like, get out there and be like, you know what? You know, every year's the year of Mario, but we need a little
fire, I guess.
Yeah, something, you know? It's looking like the year of Rosalina, actually.
Yeah, it just looks like the year of Rosalina.
That pretty much wraps up 2013.
What about the day the Game Scoop of the Year was recorded?
The Game Scoop of the Year?
Yeah.
What was that?
It's today. Today?
This is the game. This is like the longest one by far.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean's probably asleep in there.
Yeah.
We're going to have to go and turn
off. Everyone's gone. New people are working here. Flying cars.
What a year of Luigi it was.
Thanks a lot, guys. Viewers, thank you so much for hanging out with us all throughout 2013. Stay tuned for more Game Scoops in 2014. Everybody have very happy holidays and happy New Year.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.